So what reel do you think is playing there? You know, I can remember listening to that song, driving around with my dad, listening to classic rock, and it's like that kind of feel, easygoing, like the sun is shining, and you're just driving, and you're feeling good, and maybe dad says, you know, son, I've got some advice for you. Keep it to yourself. Leave me alone. Oh, wait a minute, that's literally repeated like 5 times at the end of the song. It doesn't really jive with the feel. He's trying to feel good, trying to feel happy, trying to feel joyful like the sun is shining, but he keeps saying, leave me alone, it's my life. Keep it to yourself, leave me alone. So clearly this is a person who doesn't want to take advice anymore. And as you listen to the song, we don't really know the details that he might have been thinking about for what happened in this relationship. Is this somebody toxic and I have to move them out of my life? Or is this someone who's actually trying to help and I'm just being stubborn? But I think the real you start to hear is some sense of, I deserve to be in charge of my own life. I know best what is good for me. Life should be happy. It should feel joyful. And if you negatively impact my joy, then you're out of here. But you can think about how those reels impact us, right? And I know that sounds a little harsh, and you're thinking back through the song, like, I was enjoying that. Now am I supposed to not like this song anymore? Just relax. What I'm saying is when you think about the reels that are playing, often we don't realize that there's something deeper underneath that. And I can't tell you how many times, you know, even people will come and talk to me at the church. They're struggling with a relationship with a child or with a parent or with their spouse. And coming out of their mouth is some version of, I should be in charge of my own life. Aren't I supposed to be happy? Isn't life supposed to feel good? And, you know, they drive me crazy or they stress me out. And so I just have to separate from them. It affects marriages. It affects parents and kids. It affects colleagues. Well, what if that's because the reel I'm playing is actually coming from the folly of a jester instead of the wisdom of a sage? And so as we dig into the book of Proverbs this morning, it's going to suggest to us a new reel, something new that we can play, that I find joy when I give and take and give. Little bit of give and take, little bit of take and give. And so it helps us to identify where are the moments that I don't realize I've been sitting in the jester's chair. I was comfortable, I didn't even realize it, but I want to switch over to another seat, another reel, another way of thinking. So we're going to look at the book of Proverbs, and we're back in chapter 15. So almost everything that we've talked about in this series is coming from Proverbs chapter 14, or chapter 15. So if you've found things here that have been helpful to you, thoughtful for you, applicable for you, useful to you, check out the book of Proverbs. Read the other chapters. It is incredible how practical the wisdom is in that book, right in the middle of the Bible. And it's being quoted for the last 3,000 years because people across cultures and across time have seen the value in it. So we're going to look at the 20th proverb that is listed in that chapter. It says, a wise son makes a father glad, but a foolish man despises his mother. Folly is joy to him who is destitute of discernment, but a man of understanding walks uprightly. So there's a couple different things going on here. I want you to notice this one first. A wise son makes a father glad. You know, as I listened to that song this week, I thought, you know, it almost sounds like maybe an adult child writing home or calling home to mom and dad. And you can feel the hurt, the break in that relationship. But this says that a wise son makes a father glad. And one of the things I love about Proverbs is there are often multiple layers at play. So in one sense, that first line could simply mean, hey, here's something smart to do, right? Make dad happy. That's going to go well for you, right? And dad's probably sitting there thinking, you know, if my children would just try to make me happy. So there's definitely that layer to it. Like, hey, this is one of the smartest things you can do is just try to make dad happy. Make him glad. But the other layer of this is what happens in a mom or a dad when instead of pushing them away or despising them, the child takes wisdom from them. man, does that make dad glad. Man, does that make mom glad when they see their son or daughter living wisely. Which is really what the second piece is about. When it says that folly is joy to him who is destitute of discernment, but a man of understanding walks uprightly. Did you notice that both of these are pursuing the same thing? That word glad and that word joy, they come from the same root word in the original language. So the Old Testament is originally written in Hebrew. You can go ahead and bring up that next slide. It means to rejoice or to show joy. So both the wise and the fool are seeking sameach, joy, rejoicing. They want the same thing. And that's important because it's not as if the Bible is going to show up and say, no, you should not be happy. Life should be bad. Deal with it. And yet we do. We have difficult relationships. We face challenges in life. Is there a difference between happiness and joy? When I don't feel like laughing, is there still some deeper sense of satisfaction that I can feel? That's what the Bible's going to talk about as joy. So both of them are pursuing it, but where are they finding it? And so this really gets us to the difference between wisdom and folly. So when you sit in the jester's seat, this is the picture that the book of Proverbs uses for the fool. Typically what this means is I am primarily focused on myself. What makes me happy? What brings me pleasure? What is for my personal gain? And then there are a lot of things that don't have to be bad things, but they become bad things when we make them the ultimate thing. Pleasure, success, income, notoriety. Seeking that kind of joy really comes from a place that is, to put it strongly, destitute of discernment. And we all have those moments in our lives where we would say, you know, I think I thought that was fun in my 20s, and I'd rather not talk about it now. Right? That's the kind of thing it means. Well, what happens when we switch over to the seat of the sage? You see, the definition that the Bible is going to give of wisdom is a whole lot more than just knowledge. Often when we think of wisdom, you picture somebody like on a mountaintop with their legs crossed and a beard a mile long, just thinking deep thoughts about the universe. He is so wise. Is he? You see, if it's just knowledge, then I just sit around feeling like I'm smarter than everybody else. But the way that the Bible talks about wisdom is that wisdom is knowing the right thing to do and doing it. You can never separate those two in the biblical picture of wisdom. If I'm as smart as anybody on the planet and I know just what to do, but I don't follow through, then how wise am I really? It takes action behind that new mindset. And so part of what it's trying to pitch to us here is, yes, joy is real. It's worth pursuing, but let's try a new reel. Instead of joy is for me and how do I get more joy, what if I give joy to others? What if I started out a day thinking, what would it look like to make someone else joyful today? One of the smartest things you can do. One of the wisest things that we can take a part of. Not only in the picture of the father and the son and the mother, but that's one of the great pictures of it. So I've got four kids. My kids are all teenagers right now, and so I am looking forward to the day when I get that phone call that says, Dad, you were right. Any of you gotten that phone call? Like, it's real, it's real. I remember making that phone call. I think it was my sophomore year of college because, you know, they give you that furniture that, like, the beds and the desks can all stack together, and it's like Tetris in your college dorm room. I'm sitting at my desk. I just came back from class, and I heard something in this class the teacher said that was, like, mind-blowing. It made so much sense. I was like, I think this just changed my life. I've never thought about it that way before. You know who would think this was interesting? My dad. So I'm sitting at my college desk in my dorm room. I take out my phone. This was a little while ago, so I flip it open, push the physical buttons. Don't worry, this one's not connected to the wall anymore. It was a cell phone. Hey, Dad. Guess what I just learned? And as I'm explaining it to him in this conversation, and he's speaking back to me, oh, yeah, you know, that's a little bit like this, and yeah, it just as kind as could be. And halfway through the conversation, I realized, wait a minute, I've heard this somewhere before. I've heard this from Dad before, like at least a dozen times. I stopped mid-conversation. I said, actually, Dad, you know what I just realized? You told me this. You were right. Now, I don't know what a smile sounds like, but I'm pretty sure I was hearing it on the other end of the phone. Right? A wise son makes his father glad. That moment for my dad is realizing that the wisdom he'd been trying to pass on, at least a little bit of it, it took. That you get to share wisdom, and it gives joy to others, but it also brings joy back to you. So you could be in either of those positions. You know, maybe it's a parent, maybe it's a mentor, maybe it's a colleague, someone who has built into you that you could go back and say, hey, thank you, you were right, that was helpful to me. They've given joy to you by helping you become more wise. You can give joy to them by being thankful. You can give joy to others by helping them become more wise, even if you're still waiting for that phone call, even if that phone call never comes. Because you see, one of the big pictures there is that this son, this daughter, is willing to take that advice, to become wise. And that brings such joy to the person who's trying to instill it. Which I think is why the next line is very connected to that concept of advice. It says, without counsel, plans go awry, but in the multitude of counselors, they are established. Now, you may even have heard this one or a version of it before, because this is kind of the idea that you never want to be the smartest person in the room, right? Like, we know what happens to a company if the board is filled with yes men and yes women. Whatever you say, boss, you're a genius, boss. Oh, you always have the best ideas, boss. Right? Then you're only getting one person's expertise because everybody else is just trying to keep you happy. So instead, what the sage is telling us in Proverbs is that without counsel, if you don't seek outside opinions, other perspectives, even though some of them you'll have to weigh against others, then plans go awry, things get off track. But in the multitude of counselors, they are established. So it's not even just bringing in like one person I trust and saying, I mean, you agree with me, right? Well, not really. What do you know? Right? It's too easy to dismiss one person. And yet, how often do we function this way? I try to handle it myself. Or maybe I bring in one other person who's going to tell me what I want to hear. I mean, you think of that from a company standpoint, that damages the company. Think about it from a relational standpoint. How often in our relationships, in our marriages, am I actually venting? And what I want is for somebody to say, you know, you're right. You don't deserve this. You deserve to be happy. You shouldn't have to put up with that. You should tell it like it is. I knew it. That's exactly what I was hoping you were going to say. Might want to find a few more counselors. People who are wise. People who are willing to give you feedback. People who will speak into this. Because there is an old reel that the fool likes to play. And I've been that jester many times. And so I think about how often have these reels played in my head. That, you know what? Forget counsel. It's faster to just do it myself. I know it's not great to be the only person in the room, the smartest person in the room. I know I should ask around, but I don't have time. It's faster to just do it myself. And you know, honestly, help comes with strings. I mean, I like everybody here, but if I ask them for help, then they're going to want something from me, and I'm just too busy. But then again, if I ask for help, if I ask for counsel, maybe that makes me look weak. I mean, I'm supposed to be the boss. I'm supposed to be a leader. I'm supposed to show that I have a plan. So I'm not showing it to anybody until it's ready to execute, and then they just need to cooperate. I need to be a leader. Or another version of this is actually, I don't want to be a burden. I'd actually love to get some help, but, you know, everybody's busy, and I don't want to bother them, and, you know, they got a lot going on, too. I'll just try to figure it out on my own. See, all of those reels keep us from getting good counsel. And then what happens is we end up avoiding advice that really would have helped, alienating colleagues or family who would have been happy to speak into the situation, making mistakes, becoming overworked and overburdened. So there's a new reel that we can put on, but it's kind of a tough one. If we're talking about a give and take and give, this is the take part, to take advice joyfully. I could maybe do this if we leave off that last word, right? Am I willing to take advice joyfully? Sometimes I take advice because I have no choice. Sometimes I take advice and I'm waiting for you to finish giving me advice. But am I willing to be humble enough, intentional enough, to spend the time to actually receive advice? Last week, I was sitting in a leader training here at Horizon that Ryan Ventura, our family ministry pastor, was leading, and he was brainstorming with the guys how to do some of the work that he was planning. And he said, the reason for that, he said, I tell my team this all the time, is because we is smarter than me. And he immediately owned that the grammar is terrible, but it makes it catchy, it makes it sticky, and he was right. I've been thinking about it all week. We is smarter than me. Like, if you really believe that other people have insights and expertise and different experience that can feed into the situation, the conversation with my family or with my colleagues or a project that I'm working on, then am I willing to take that? So maybe ask yourself this question. Am I open to feedback, even difficult feedback? I think so. I like to think that I am. Now imagine I asked that same question to your family or the people that you work with. I think if you asked my family, they'd say, well, Dad has some strong opinions. Are we willing to humble ourselves enough, not to brace ourselves against input, but to enjoy it? Because we see the benefit that comes from it. That's a new reel. Because if that's what's playing in my head, then instead of, like, when I get a negative feedback, instead of becoming defensive, well, you know, I was trying to, and besides, and making excuses, it's more like, okay, bring it on. I'm listening. This is a chance to grow. This is a chance to get better for me and for us. That's what he means when he says a multitude of counselors. Can we take advice joyfully? I was reading an article a couple of weeks ago about two friends that are experts in their field, have been highly successful, and as they were describing how they became so successful, they said, well, it's really because of our friendship. And I thought, well, okay, because they must share resources or something, like this guy knew somebody, that guy knew somebody. But as they talked about it, they said the biggest thing was that they had learned from each other what the other person knew. Whatever this guy had mastered and this guy's expertise was, if we could take that and put it together, and then we'll start asking around, what does everybody else know? And so they've become two of the most successful people that you've probably ever heard of. Because that article was about Charlie Munger and Warren Buffett. And as I listened to this, I mean, you could just hear the friendship, like just how much fun they had doing this together. Because their ability to invest financially and grow money and all this stuff, it's like, you know, we're all reading the articles about where did Warren Buffett move $1 million this week? I want to do whatever he did because he just seems to always get it right. Oh, he pulled $1 million out of this. Everybody panic. You know, he's doing AI. He's not doing AI. Why are we so locked in on this one person? Well, he would say it's not really me. It's me and Charlie. And Charlie would say it's not really us. In fact, this is what Charlie Munger said. I believe in the discipline of mastering the best that other people have figured out. I don't believe in just sitting down and trying to dream it all up yourself. Nobody's that smart. Boy, that sounds an awful lot like Proverbs. And I love the language he uses here, that he says the discipline. Right? I'm not going to trip into this. I'm going to have to humble myself. I'm going to have to put time into it. I'm going to have to set time aside to actually work at it, to ask for input, to learn from others, to master the best that other people have figured out. What an incredible picture of friendship and success, to be surrounded with that kind of wise counsel. I've actually had a chance to do that right here at Horizon as well. You know, we often talk at Horizon that really a big part of what we're here to do is to comfortably connect to God through the Bible and a community of people that are growing in that relationship with God, that it's something we actually do together. And so when you think about, you know, like group studies that we do here at Horizon, men's groups, women's groups, that's a chance to be surrounded by a multitude of counselors. And so I jumped into a group a couple of years ago with a handful of guys. And as we went in there, you know, honestly, some of us were like, well, I think the Bible's true, and so I'm looking for what other wisdom it has. And other guys were like, I'm not so sure, but I'm open to the idea. Let's read it together. And so we've just been kind of going, you know, page by page through this book, looking for what wisdom is in there. And some of the conversations are just incredible because it's so easy if you've never read the Bible. And there are difficult pieces. Like there's ancient history that sometimes you're trying to figure out what's the culture doing and what's happening here. But then there's just this incredible wisdom from seeing people actually live their lives by stuff that God tells them. And so when you sit down in a room like that and you get to try to process it together, and I remember one day we were reading this passage that was talking about how we're supposed to be loving and humble. Well, who's going to sit in that room and say, I refuse? Okay, but I do have a question. And this was great example of this. One guy was talking about in his company, there are times where he has to let somebody go. It's not working out for them. It's damaging the company. It's just time to move on. He says that's always a painful conversation. But if humble means lifting other people up and loving, like how could I be loving and humble when I have to let somebody go? And so the book that we were reading in here, the book called Philippians, talking about it around the group, well, hey, what's your experience been? Well, hey, how would you take that line? Do you think that could apply? Do you think that would change the way you think about it? And by the end of that evening, as we sat there for about an hour just talking it through, we had come up with, hey, what would it look like the next time you have to have that kind of conversation if you could honestly tell that person that you care about them, that this is a difficult decision for you too, but you think it's going to be for their best, that if this role isn't working out for them, there may be another role in the company, but there may be another role somewhere else that's actually going to make them happier, make them more successful, that you're willing to help them connect to that next role in any way that you can, because you're now thinking about the person first. They may or may not believe you. They may still throw a stapler at you and march out of your office, but you know that in your heart, you were doing what you could to do this in a loving way, in a humble way, that offered help, even though you had to make this difficult decision. And I just love it, because if I'm going into that situation on my own, maybe I figure it out, maybe I don't, but when we surround ourselves with a multitude of counselors, like Charlie Munger said, we can tap into the best that other people have figured out. I want you to have a chance to do that too. So I know some of you here have been a part of groups before, but maybe a lot of you haven't. And so today, right after this service, we're having something that we call a groups open house. So if you're in the chapel, as you leave the chapel, the third door on the left is what we call the hearth room. And there's going to be a handful of just our team leaders and staff in there to have a conversation with you. No hard sales pitch. You know, you don't have to sign anything before you leave. You don't have to make a donation. Just someone to have a conversation with you and help you discover a place that you might love connecting to other guys or other gals. In fact, in the next couple weeks, we're starting up two brand new groups, one for the men and one for the women. The one for the guys is called Beyond Success. It's being led by Ryan Ventura, who I mentioned earlier. This is what we were kind of brainstorming together. And it's going to be this just incredible season of thinking about, if success looks like this, 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 and this, and we've all heard the interviews, right? Like, I've got 6 championships, and is that all there is? I won 5 Super Bowls, but there has to be more than this. I made partner, and well, I guess it's still just Tuesday. What is there that goes beyond success? And so we're going to be looking at a number of God's encounters with real people and how he showed them that. But honestly, your favorite part might just be getting around that table with some other guys, making a few friends, hanging out. There's going to be some food and some drinks to just enjoy discovering that multitude of counselors. On the other side, for the gals, we have something coming up called Brave Woman, Mighty God. And this is one of those times, guys, you're going to be jealous that you can't go to this, because there's this picture of women all throughout history, in times and cultures where women were not elevated the way that they are today, where God is saying, I'm going to elevate them. And you just get this incredible picture of these women who are leaders, who are in families, who change history in such a way that their stories have been written down and we're still talking about them thousands of years later. So gals, if that's of interest to you, you know what your favorite part might be? Just getting around that table with some other gals, making a friend and starting to build out that multitude of counselors. And that's a big part of what we're really trying to do here together. This Sunday morning is a lot of fun, but some of the best stuff happens when you start to connect to other people. I think that's why he talks so much about the joy that comes from sharing this advice. Because in the next line, the 23rd proverb of this chapter, he says, a man has joy. There it is again. Everything keeps coming back to joy. A man has joy by the answer of his mouth, and a word spoken in due season, how good it is. Do you know that feeling? When somebody comes to you, when you're in a trial, you're in a challenge, you've had a hard day or a hard season, maybe it's been a hard quarter, and they say just the right thing at just the right time to help you, to encourage you, to keep you moving forward. That's what it means by a word spoken in due season, just the right time. And you get the two layers again, because in one sense, a man has joy by the answer of his mouth. Right, that before we've been talking about receiving that advice, but now it's saying, hey, what am I answering to other people? When somebody comes to me and says, I'm in a crisis, what should I do? And I have a chance to speak wisdom. Well, that brings joy to them. How good it is to get that word of encouragement in just the right season. But it also brings joy to you. How good it feels, like that parent, like that mentor, like that colleague, to offer wisdom and to see somebody actually live it out. A word spoken in due season, how good it is. So for the give and take and give, they both kind of get combined here, that we take joy in giving a good word. If you've ever experienced that, if you've ever been the one to see how it changes like a child's day, when you tell them they're wonderful. You know, somebody on your team, a colleague, a family member, a spouse, when you tell them, hey, you got this and I'll help. And the relief that happens as they keep moving forward, how good that feels. Well, now imagine how good that feels for God. When he gets to speak just the right word to you at just the right time. Because actually, as we've gone through this book of Proverbs, if you go back and read the first couple of chapters, it makes this very clear. But I'll give you one example from the second chapter in the sixth line. It says, for the Lord gives wisdom. From his mouth come knowledge and understanding. This is the relationship that God wants to have with you. And this is actually a critical piece of the argument that Christianity makes for the reality of God's wisdom. That it is not for no reason that I am standing up here with a recent printing of a very old book. And that instead of saying, well, that's weird how people used to live back then, we're saying, oh my goodness, that is helpful. You see, part of the argument that Christianity makes is that all wisdom, all truth is ultimately coming from God. That the reason this stuff makes sense across cultures, across timelines, is because God is the one who made this all and he knows how to make it work right. And so he tells us, hey, this is the right thing to do. Now do it. He wants to draw us into that kind of relationship with him. Often we think of him as distant. But when you understand the core message of the Bible, it's not even just good advice because hopefully you'll have a little bit of a better life. Hey, try this out and you'll enjoy your family a little bit more. That is awesome. God absolutely wants to bless our lives when we align with the way that he has designed things to be. But it's even more than that. You see, God knows that every single one of us has sat in the chair of the jester. Yeah, we've made some little mistakes, but we've also made some little mistakes. Some things that we regret. Things that we knew were wrong, let alone what God would tell us. And that in the midst of that, he says, rather than let you face the ultimate consequence for that, God came to earth in the person of Jesus. The ultimate example, the wisest man, to take that consequence for us so that we could be reunited with God, so that we could learn wisdom from him again, so that our lives could be blessed now but last forever through the forgiveness that Jesus Christ brings. That's at the core of all of this. So if you go home and you apply all these things and you say, that series was so helpful, I'm using it over here and I'm using it over here, me too. And I hope it is blessing my family because I'm always trying to keep growing. I want to learn the best from other people too. But I also want to learn the best from God. And so my encouragement for you as we finish this series today, enjoy discovering the wisdom of God and others. Enjoy it. Kind of like that Charlie Munger saying, what would it look like to master the best that God had to offer? So we're going to hear a final song today, but maybe as you think about what you would do with this week, hey, maybe there's a parent, maybe there's a mentor, maybe there's a colleague, maybe there's someone that you want to call and tell them, thank you for giving me a good word at just the right time. You know, maybe there's a place where you want to gather that multitude of counselors, possibly by checking out one of those groups that we just talked about. Maybe there's a place where you know you've needed to take that advice humbly. And maybe there's a place, even just reading the book of Proverbs, where you want to start tapping into the best of God, even as you tap into the best of others. And so as you hear this final song, I think you're going to know it. And you could hear it as that parent, as that colleague, as that mentor telling you that you can count on them. But today, would you also hear it like it was being sung to you by God? That he would say to your heart and mind, you can count on me. Can we just take a minute to talk to God right now? God, thank you that we can count on you. As I'm just thinking about that song, when we have moments that we are stressed or anxious or not sure what to do next, God, for whatever conversations we may have thought of, even just during this morning of somebody that we'd love to hear from who's been pushing us away, of somebody that we'd love to thank, of some way that we'd love to live out this wisdom. Would you help us, like when we're distracted in traffic or laying in bed at night staring at the ceiling, to sense that you really are there, that we really can count on you, how much we really mean to you. Thank you for speaking that to us in your word. Thank you for giving us your wisdom. I ask that you would help us to live it out, to see your goodness as we get to know you better. And we'll pray that in your name, God. Amen.